This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Oboe Radio, the heart of it all on the Contact Talk Radio Network, where we explore the power of love, unity, courage, and compassion. Are you ready? Join the Oboe team to focus on solutions, sacred practices, and the key players who are busy creating a world that works for all.
Hello, everyone. Happy Friday afternoon, wherever you might be. This is Sherry Herndon, your host for Heart of It All, and I am happy to be back. I've been away for a couple weeks and just really glad to be able to step back into this conversation and my amazing guest today, and really looking forward to it. So as you have been following Heart of It All, if you are new or if you are someone who is a devoted listener, you know that the phrase Heart of It All really has a lot of meaning for us. And we have a lot of associations that come up when we think of the Heart of It All. And for today's conversation, we're going to be looking at the Heart of It All in terms of operating systems, technology, perception, and really what goes on the internet, and a new imagining, a new kind of technology platform. We might not think that that is of the greatest relevance to us. Some of us know that it is absolutely. But today we're going to really dive into a conversation which is going to take us somewhere you probably haven't been with regard to a conversation around new technology. And that's why I'm so excited to have Chris Larkham as my guest today. So before I do a formal invitation, Chris, just welcome to Heart of It All. I'm so happy that we get to play in this field together.
Thank you, Cherie. I'm here.
Yes, you are here. And if you could hear his accent there, which you'll be hearing more, he's from the UK. And I love that he calls me Cherie. It like makes me feel super special. So when I was looking at Chris's website earlier, I love that he describes himself as a co-creator and a dreamer and an artist and a scientist and a lover and an inventor and a coder and a new, N-O-O, cyberneticist. And that's just like really is a great description of the kind of mosaic and the multidimensionality of Chris. So let me introduce him. Chris Larkham is passionate about co-creating systems and energies that support the emergence of an ecstatic and sustainable, thriving existence for all of life on Earth. That sounds pretty much like a fantastic mission. His focus is on developing radical new technologies and systems of thought that act as tools for a transition through transcendence. Chris has an academic background in computer science with a bachelor's of science in computer science and a master's with distinction in evolutionary and adaptive systems. And then he's a PhD candidate for several years in epigenetic cognitive robotics. So you'll have a little bit of a sense of how he has this background to be able to dive into this world the way he does. And then after experiencing a profoundly transformative spiritual awakening and feeling very profound for the state of the planet, like many of us, Chris left the world of academia in order to found NewMap. That is what we'll be talking about today, amongst other things. NewMap, N-O-O, as in Noosphere, a map of the Noosphere, a holonic communication technology and social networking platform based on an innovative new form of media that Chris calls the holonic map. We'll be getting into that definition of holonic. And for the last 3 years, Chris has been developing NewMap and is now working with a team of dedicated co-creators on the project, co-creation is a really core principle here. Chris is passionate about conscious human evolution and creating empowering biomimetic and holonic technologies that operate in harmony with the biosphere. I think Buckminster Fuller is so happy about this. He is affectionately known as Larky by many of us. So, Chris, Larky, welcome to Heart of It All. And again, it's just like a delight to be able to like be in a conversation with you, given how much we've been playing and dialoguing about all of this for some months now.
Indeed, yes. Like it feels great. I'm really happy to be here, Cherie. You are
exactly
super special.
So let's just dive in. I think it would be really wonderful for people to get a sense of your how you arrived at your kind of mission, because here you are in this pretty amazing academic world of, you know, with the computer science and epigenetics and evolutionary adaptive systems and working at in a PhD program, and you left all of that, and you left that to birth something in the world that you felt was really necessary. So let's hear a little bit about your awakening process and where that took you.
Yeah, well, it's been quite a journey, and I guess it really began when I was about 22 years old. Right between my master's degree and PhD. So I'd spent a year of intensely studying a topic, which was an interdisciplinary topic called evolutionary and adaptive systems, which is systems theory and studying natural adaptive systems, looking at nature and how it's organized or self-organized. And then how can we learn from nature to create adaptive and intelligent technologies? And so it was partly science and partly engineering. And that gave me a different way of looking at things, a more non-linear whole systems way of looking at things. And the way I was perceiving the world after that was different to the way I was perceiving the world before it. So that master's degree was quite unusual. And I think all of the people on the course were quite affected by it positively. Mm-hmm. But it was really after that, and I experienced a really profound spiritual awakening, and it was catalyzed by LSD, a festival. And really, it was almost like a rebirth experience for me, and at that point, everything shifted, and I went from being quite agnostic, really. I had been sort of identified with atheism, but I moved into an agnostic space. And then I had this spiritual experience, and I went back to a kind of spiritual space where I integrated science with spirituality through, I guess, geometry. So I had this experience of a transcendent experience where my sense of self changed, and I felt as though, well, it was more in the feeling, it was a knowing that I was everyone, and I guess my ego really took a kind of back seat. And basically, I could see that all religions were pointing to a transcendent or transcendental truth or reality beyond the words, beyond the metaphor. Somehow, all the religions were pointing to something that is real, ontologically real, an experience of higher or expanded consciousness. And as a scientist, and I was very much in the scientific reality at the time, I couldn't deny what I was experiencing because it was a direct knowing. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, you know, how can I take this back with me? Mm-hmm. And the only language I could really use was sort of based on geometry. So at that point, I kind of rewired my nervous system, and my journey really began. I'm interested in psychedelics, but yeah, it's kind of still semi-taboo to discuss it in the Western culture, but that's now changing with research. But, you know, not everyone experiences a spiritual or religious experience, but it certainly happens, and it's, you know, well documented. But the map is not the territory. And that's one of my favorite phrases that came from Alfred Kozhipsky. The map is not the territory. And really, the territory I experienced that day transformed me. And my life was not the same from that point. And I never looked back. And it really, like, I kind of began a mission of, you know, because I could see it was almost like everyone was kind of somehow outside of the now. And it seemed as though everyone was seeking something like that's in the future. And I felt as though if we could communicate that scientifically, maybe we could create a different experience on the Earth that was more joyful and peaceful. But after, should I carry on? What happened after
no,
that?
That's great. Let me just... thanks for asking. Let me just direct a little bit. Yeah, we want you to keep carrying on. Let me just ask a question about what happened with... So you've had this awakening, which is really happening to many people, and I think it's really important stories that we share our stories of awakening, because it's like we crack open the veils and we see through the limitations of the programming, so to speak, and we open ourselves up to new realities and new ways of seeing, which is so perfect given your background. And so did you then go into your PhD program after that and then kind of had another sort of wake-up call that had you leave? What was it that... So now you're in an epigenetics, you're studying epigenetics and
So basically, that in that experience, I experienced a higher level of synchronicity than normal, and that really led me to question the fundamental beliefs I had about physics and the way the world operates, and also, like, you know, what is enlightenment? I experienced a sort of temporary enlightened state, so I began an investigation. I read every book I could. I was on the internet. And then I went into my PhD, you know, having had that experience. So I was now doing kind of two things, really. My PhD, which was really pursuing my curiosity and interest in AI, artificial intelligence, and consciousness, because I've always been fascinated by consciousness. And it was really my way of trying to understand what I am. What is this? Why are we here? Answering these big philosophical questions. For me, AI was my way of doing that. Synthetic methodology. So I was pursuing that, but simultaneously I was experimenting on my own consciousness, and I began to experiment with different psychedelics. So I was really doing it for self-exploration and to understand, you know, what this is about, you know, what is possible. And so I was studying consciousness from the inside and the outside simultaneously, and I think that enabled me to find a kind of balance between the objective and subjective. And I managed to create a new worldview for myself, which helped me see things differently. And I had a fair amount of free time or flexible amount of time during the PhD. And I then watched every documentary I could online. And I had access to, you know, the internet, obviously, and the library at the university. And I came across works by Abraham Maslow and Timothy Leary, Terence McKenna, and, you know, these people were really important to me at the time because they made sense of what I was experiencing in a way that most authors somehow couldn't. And I know that Barbara Marx Hubbard, her influences, the people she feels have touched her deeply are very, they're the same set of people pretty much, including Adair Chardin and Abraham Maslow. And it felt as though there were a small set of people who had ventured into this new space of conscious experience and mapped that territory. And I was sort of seeing them as, you know, transcendentalists, I guess you could say. So it's a, they ventured into a larger territory of human consciousness or transhuman consciousness. And then I just really felt as though, then what happened is I got drawn into an activist reality, and I was temporarily interacting with the Zeitgeist movement, and I helped screen the film a few times, and I really could feel the pain of the of humanity and the Earth, because humanity is part of the Earth, and I could see, based on studying the scientific data available, that our hydrocarbon-based society is completely unsustainable, and perhaps that's a good thing, because it's painful to be in this reality and of consumption and disconnection and separation. So I felt as though basically if humanity was to survive another 10 or 20 years, I think 20 being optimistic, 10 being safe, we had to radically change our trajectory. And by trajectory, I mean the basic way we think, perceive, interact, how we deal with technology, how we relate to each other, everything. And I was looking at it from a whole systems perspective because of my background. And I felt as though this kind of reductionist, purely left brain cognition way of thinking, way of perceiving, was actually intrinsic to the problem in the first place, part of the problem. So it's, as Einstein says, we would need to change our thinking to solve the problems, because it's, you can't solve problems with the same kind of thinking that created them. So here I was on the internet experimenting with my consciousness in my spare time and on the internet watching all these documentaries, and I felt really I had to do something, because I was in a unique position to do something, and I felt it, I just felt like, well, if not me, then who, and if not now, then when, and who else is doing anything? And I felt as though I saw one possibility for one probable future reality that we could co-create to escape this kind of entropic consumption paradigm. And that was really inspired through the resource-based economy concept and the Venus Project, which is quite technocratic, but the essence of it for me was sharing and symbiosis, and I resonated with that on a deep level, and I felt as though it complements nature's natural operating system of self-organizing ecosystems, that it's win-win symbiosis. And so it's really sharing and having a, it's moneyless, it's going beyond money and sharing resources in a way that is optimal in reference to our natural sort of biological homeostasis. So we would optimize the life support systems to minimize labor, to maximize health and well-being, not just for human beings, but for the whole biosphere. So I decided that I would put energy into creating that, because it felt to me as though the money system and the economy was the big thing holding us back, because all of the pieces of the puzzle seem to be there. The solutions are there, and they were there when I started this 4 years ago. But I felt like, how can we bring them together? How can we bring those pieces of the puzzle together, make them visible, give energy to them, and create them? How can we do that in this economy, in this socioeconomic system, in this way of thinking? And it seemed as though what needed to change was the way of thinking, the worldview, and then the socioeconomic system. So I started a project called SERBE, which stands for Scalable Resource-Based Economy. That was what became NewMap. And I ended up spending more and more time on this idea until I got to the point where I could no longer stay in academia, and I began to realize how the system itself really, and the way of thinking that goes with that, is what's holding us back. And I felt more and more inhibited and held back by the academic system, and I became completely disillusioned with the academic system and began to discover that the world was far stranger than I ever imagined, and that basically I felt quite angry, as though I'd been lied to about everything. And I think I went more and more down the rabbit hole, and each step I took, I feel I took carefully and following a scientific method, but expanding my concept and understanding of science and ontology to include consciousness and the subjective felt direct experience at the moment, which to me is now fundamental. And things got quite cosmic, basically. But I still feel like I am a rational being, and I look at observational evidence, and I consider other people's opinions, and I have an intention not to cling to any particular belief systems, and I like to take in as much information as I can. And so I understand that some of the things I say are controversial, but for me, it's always been a rational journey. A transrational journey, but not irrational. Mm-hmm.
I want to just jump in with a few comments. I love hearing your kind of the flow of the story, because it's you're building the foundation for us to explore in our second half of our time here, and I imagine that we might do like a part two to keep going, exploring and diving in. So like when you were saying how continuing to watch those assumptions of what's true, I'm reminded of David Bohm's work as a quantum physicist in the peak of his field. He was deeply influenced by Krishnamurti, and he devoted himself to like what would it take to change consciousness, and he felt that it would be in dialogue spaces where people would let their egos and their assumptions about reality go. So that then they would step into a really, truly generative field, which would be the quantum field of infinite potential. Okay. So I love hearing how you are in the rational and the transrational and cosmic. It's like such a beautiful, it feels to me very whole. You feel like that feels like a whole being to me when you describe yourself in that way. And, I'm also reminded of Buckminster Fuller's quote about not being victims of our circumstances, but architects of our future. And the work, what the choices that you made, you, even with feeling the kind of the pain of the suffering that's happening on our planet in so many ways, that to choose to create. So I just really want to honor you for that and that courage and the devotion, because I believe that those are the ingredients that it takes for everyone to bring then their gifts fully forward, which I really see you doing, bringing your gifts forward. So I want to read a beautiful quote from Peter Russell about toward a global brain, and use that as a stepping off point into NUMAP. And just then we can dive in. So this is Peter Russell from his book Toward a Global Brain. The internet will be able to form new associations, synthesize information, creating new knowledge, and perhaps solve problems presented to it. There we go, that AI. It will then have become a system that can learn and think for itself. The changes this will bring will be so great that their full impact may well be beyond our imagination, for some. No longer will we perceive ourselves as isolated individuals. We will know ourselves to be part of a rapidly integrating global network, the nerve cells of an awakening global brain. So that quote, I know, must have some resonance for you and in the work that you, your studies, and then in what you've been creating with NUMAP as a kind of mapping of the whole of a new way of mapping the planet. From a whole system perspective, because we don't really get to see what's most important or what's the most relevant information. Maybe just use that as a starting point into like what is NUMAP? What's its fundamental sort of basis, so we can define some of those terms, and then let's dive in.
Yeah, sure. So that's, I love that quote, and The association with the global brain is very relevant to NUMAP. NUMAP in itself, really, I sort of tend to make a distinction between the technology and the application of it. So the application of it is just as important as the raw what it is. But what it is really, NUMAP is a communication technology, and it's based on the concept of a holon, So holon means whole and apart, something that's simultaneously a whole and apart. And through new map, it's possible to map our perception of energy as holons. So you can have a holon containing a holon containing a holon, and it has this Russian doll fractal geometry. And for me, a holon, it also relates to the concept of a system. Again, back to the systems theory, the whole systems thinking, that everything can affect and is associated and linked to everything else. To me, the holon is the essential core geometry behind the concept or word system. So it's also a slightly stealthy way of bringing the bringing systems thinking to a wider audience through NuMap. So by using NuMap, it kind of helps you think in systems because of the holon being the fundamental thing behind a system. So a system, what is a system? System is observer dependent, and you can say this system contains subsystems and these subsystems contain subsubsystems and this system is contained in a supersystem. And that really, the thing that's going on there is you've got this nested structure. So the holon captures that. So then we have a whole new form of media when we start to map perception or energy using holons. So really NuMap is delivering a new form of media, and I call that a holonic map. Or you could call it a holonomic map as well. And you could think of it as mapping thoughts and things, but I tend to really look at it as we're mapping our perception. So it's really our consciousness that we're mapping, and also the activity of the nervous system. And this is what leads into the global brain association, because if we're collectively mapping on our consciousness, our perception, our experience, then we're also collectively mapping our nervous system. So from a planetary perspective, you could see the nervous system of humanity, the collective nervous system of humanity, as the nervous system of the Earth. And the term noosphere there's several definitions. One of them is the mental layer, a sheath of mental or a thinking layer around the Earth. So the mind of the Earth, and so humanity's nervous system is the nervous system of the Earth. And as we become conscious of that, we begin to create a conscious noosphere, not just a noosphere. We already have a noosphere, but we're going to have a self-conscious noosphere that thinks of itself as the noosphere. And as I'm actually saying this now, I'm actually creating that truth, creating that reality, becoming conscious that I'm not just an individual, but I am the Earth thinking through this particular Gaia cell, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So NuMap is...
Let me just interrupt you there, because it's so good and juicy, Chris. So as a Gaia cell, so I just want people to really get this, because everyone uses the internet, everyone. And right now we think, this is as good as it gets. This is good. I get to communicate, and I can talk to people anywhere, and I can do voice over IP, and I have my little Facebook account, and I have a Twitter, and I'm on LinkedIn, and we've got all these little isolated kind of communities everywhere, and from a certain vantage point, it looks pretty good, except we don't see ourselves as part of the larger whole. So it's that worldview of fragmentation that we kind of alluded to is operating. Then what does that actually mean in terms of our ability to be compassionate, or I don't see myself as connected to these others, but that I don't even recognize that we're one, or that there's a unity consciousness at play here. So it feels to me like you're speaking directly to the fulcrum point of what can radically shift the consciousness from fragmentation to a living internet.
Yes. Well, people, I think, as far as I can see, people are beginning to realize now that the problems that we're facing around the world, poverty, ecocide, biospheric destruction and pollution, scarcity, you know, the list is endless, really. Well, it's not endless, but there's a long list of global systemic emergent problems that can't seem to be solved by just changing policies, or, you know, we seem to need something really radical to go beyond this level of existence. And what I would like to see is a thriving existence where everyone has, you know, Buckminster Fuller style, we meet the needs of 100% of humanity unconditionally. Everyone has food, shelter, water. How do we do that so we can thrive and unleash our creative potential? And it seems as though it's a shift in thinking. It's a fundamental shift in the way we think and perceive, because when you understand the process of creation and what's being called manifestation in the New Age literature and reality world, it really begins to some extent in the mind. So through the imagination, through our thinking, we create our experience and the physical reality. So, and a big part of that is how we think of ourselves in the world. So if I think of myself as being a purely physical being that's separate to everyone else, then that will lead to a certain way of behaving and a way of perceiving. And for me, in my own journey, and this is reflected in NUMAP, I've found a balance between being the whole and being the part, and that is being a whole and a part simultaneously, which is, again, a synergy more than the sum of its parts. So I am a separate individual, and, you know, and I'm the whole. That's how I perceive myself now. And to me, that geometry is a balance between the masculine and feminine, the feminine being the whole, the circle, the masculine being a part. So it's a whole and a part, which is something novel. It's I liken it to the spiral. I kind of think of it as a spiral, which is a balanced structure, which is also fractal. It's a simple fractal structure, a spiral. So if we start mapping everything with holons, I think that actually helps us to think in terms of holons. And what I was going to say about NUMAP, specifically, was that it's a technology, and when the nervous system, when the being interacts with the technology, it adapts. We are adaptive. We adapt to things. So when you're using Facebook, you're adapting to Facebook. When you're using MySpace, you're adapting to MySpace or YouTube or whatever, and it has an effect on us. We adapt to it. It changes us, and then we start to use it, and it really becomes an extension of the mind and body, the mind body. So people are saying we're already cyborgs, right? We are extending our mind into the technology already. We're already doing it, maybe just not fully consciously. So the iPhone becomes an extension of the mind body, and the memory in the iPhone becomes an extension of the nervous system. So I've reflected on that, and I thought, well, if I'm adapting to Facebook, what effect is that really having on me? Is that having a health? Is that healthy for me, or is that healthy for the planet, or is it not healthy? And I started to feel like we needed to design technology that actually the effect it has on us is not neutral. It's actually beneficial. So with NUMAP, I actually designed it so that it would have a positive effect on the nervous system, to, you know, as best it could, based on the understanding I had at the time. So if you look at nature, it's not made of boxes and lines. It's not made of Euclidean geometry. It's, you know, the basic shapes we use in our Western culture for architecture and in our thinking and science aren't really what nature uses. Nature tends to be more fractal and spirally and curvy, and there's a different kind of geometry to it. So my feeling was, if we could align ourselves with nature and the geometry nature's using, maybe when our nervous systems adapt to the technology, it would be more like it's adapting to nature, which is a healthier thing, because our bodies, our physical bodies, are essentially nature. Like, we're part of nature. We might feel like we're people, we might think we're people, but again, that's just a belief, that's just a perception, and the body has its own truth. The body is fractal, it's holonomic, it's made of, you know, there are body parts that contain sets of, you know, organs or, you know, systems, and then those contain different tissues, and so there are all sorts of
galaxy within ourselves. We have 150 trillion cells, and each of those cells has DNA, and each of those DNA is like 2.5 inches long. So, wow.
And you can totally see there's a mirroring as above, so below style between a human body and an ecosystem or a planet or a galaxy. And we really, and then this leads into the whole biocentric perception of consciousness, existence, the universe. It starts to look as though the universe is alive. The universe is a being. It's not just this empty clockwork, dumb machine. It's a intelligent system. It's alive. It's self-regulating, self-organizing, self-creating. It's autopoietic. It's syntropic. It's intelligent. You know, it's who knows what's out there? I mean, I feel like we're only really perceiving our own little bubble of human consciousness in this vast sea of potential experiences, but it looks as though it's intelligent when we start to look at the new science and really suspend our kind of, you know, Newtonian, Cartesian belief systems that we inherited through the education system and, you know, sort of the mass media and whatever other inputs there are there. But going back to what I was saying, like the new map, because it's based on a geometry that is more resembling nature, I think that when we use it, it has a more of a beneficial effect on us. So when we adapt to new map, because its geometry is aligned with nature, we're adapting back to nature. So for me, I would say I like to think of it as a mildly cognitive enhancing technology or a psychedelic technology.
It absolutely is. And I want to just share a very brief story of my own experience of, you know, there's Daniel Pink. He's a well-known New York Times writer, bestseller, and one of his books is called The Whole Brain Thinking and Why Right-Brainers Will Rule the Future. And he talks about how we've been so left-brain and we've come to the limits of that aspect of ourselves in terms of handling the complexity on the planet and the crises and the ability to tap into the collective intelligence. And so with that in mind, I remember being on New Map with you, and we spent half an hour, and we were zooming in and out, and I have to describe how the holons work. Like, you can go zoom in infinitely and zoom out, and you can always be feeling the part and the whole. And when we got off New Map and then we started talking, not being on inside New Map, you were talking, and I had, because I'm so clairsentient and very kinesthetic, I had the experience of my right brain and my left brain were talking to each other in a new way. And I called it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am experiencing holonic listening. Not just listening from what I know and listening at the left brain or even the right brain, but this whole brain listening. And it was directly, and that was a half an hour within New Map. So I really can imagine that there is this profound rewiring happening because of it. And so that mildly psychedelic is like opening the doors of perception and our capacities to access more of our brain's capacity. Right now they say that we're at 10%. It feels to me like what you're talking about is opening the doors into greater access to our intelligence and our wisdom of not just ourselves, but of the membrane around the larger field. So being able to, like Bruce Lipton talks about, like, oh, then that larger holon of that larger system, we can actually touch into that intelligence and access it with New Map in a way that we can't with the current system.
Absolutely. So it's really thinking like nature. And, you know, as a holon, we're part of many different systems. Nature knows we're part of the biosphere, for example. And if we just think with the left brain, we might not recognize the context, the whole that we're in. Like, we're in a community, we're in the biosphere, we're in the planet, we're in the galaxy, we're in the universe. And to me, all of these perspectives are equally valid and equally useful and relevant. And I think that if we could see ourselves as a part of a larger whole and simultaneously individuals, then we would consider maybe the effects of our actions on people the other side of the earth. And I think this is what we need to really make the shift. We need that kind of awareness, because, I mean, you pick up a phone and you can affect the energy on the other side of the earth. I mean, that's technologically, perhaps there's other ways of affecting the earth that we don't recognize. But we are becoming a global culture, global civilization. And I think that unless we really align ourselves with nature, and that includes the way nature thinks and it self-organizes, then we're going to find it hard to survive, let alone thrive. But I do think that we can thrive absolutely, totally. And if possible, I'd really like to discuss the application of NUMAP, because to me that's equally important.
I was going to speak about nonlinear connectivity and the synergy function, but let's go right into the applicability. That's perfect.
Well, I mean, that is related. So basically, I may have just used the word alignment, but if I didn't, I'm saying using it now, alignment. So maybe the second part is, you know, how do we use the technology? Are we just going to do whatever we want, or is there some kind of alignment that we need to make with nature? And it feels like that, doesn't it? It's like, you know, we can't just use an arbitrary bit of technology and ignore the consequences to the trees and the air. It's important that we have this awareness, this right brain function of the context that we're playing in. We're growing up as a species and we're becoming more aware of the consequences of our actions. We can't just have a party and leave a mess everywhere. We need to, you know, have a, you know, it's conscious partying. We can have fun and live in bliss and ecstasy, but we can't just, you know, soil
our
environment.
We can't throw things away anymore. There is no away. Throw it away. No, there
exactly.
is no away.
And unless we trash the planet and then expand into space and trash more and more planets. And I don't think that's advisable, but so what can we do? We can align ourselves. What does that mean? And it seems to me like a fundamental concept is homeostasis, but I won't go into the techie definition of that. But what I would say is that what's coming up for me in the right now, and to be in the right now, and when obviously in the moment that this is recorded, is the word syntony. Mm-hmm. And syntony is the alignment with creation experienced as inner motivation, inner knowing, intuition. And it's this feminine, it's more of a feminine energy, I would say. From an archetypal perspective, it's this more feminine, the feeling, the subjective, that our patriarchal, sort of more masculine culture is neglected maybe. And it seems that through the feminine energy, we can bring back in our intuition and inner motivation and the feeling. And through that, we can align ourselves with nature. So we want to create and apply NUMAP so that it acknowledges this subjective feeling, syntonic intelligence, syntonic knowing. And that is leading me to map specific frequencies and do specific things. And mainly it's sort of going within and following your bliss. And the word that comes up is passion. So it seems as though everyone has something that excites them inside, and maybe it was more conscious, more obvious when they were a child, and it can get buried. But with inside everyone, there's something that we're excited about, that brings us a lot of joy. It's a self-rewarding action. It's usually creative, and what you find is that when people are in their bliss and doing what they would naturally be doing if they had all their needs met, you know, and they're just having fun, they're playing, what they create actually benefits not just them, but the whole. Now, that's actually not arbitrary or a coincidence. To me, that's actually indicative of higher intelligence, actually probably programmed in the DNA. And I'm getting a bit speculative because I don't have the...
No, but that's perfect, because that goes back to Abraham Maslow and self-realization and human individual potential into social potential, and absolutely is like where we're evolving to.
Exactly. And Barbara's narrative and, you know, universal humanity, and we're moving into a new way of, it's like universal humanity. It's beyond the planet. It's extraterrestrial. There's the supramental force, and it's all kind of leading us to see that, leading us towards seeing that, you know, we're not at the top of the hierarchy in terms of the evolutionary, you know, ladder or whatever, however you want to perceive it. There is intelligence beyond human intelligence out there, right here, not just out there, but here, because here is here. There is only here. From one
everything.
Perspective.
But, so I want to make sure, because we have just like 9 minutes left, and you were speaking about passions, which is so beautiful. I loved how you were giving us that context, and maybe frame a little bit for us about the profile for the holons and the contact holons, just a little bit of a sketch within NUMAP as the a kind of a social network, and then maybe you were getting there once you kind of finished that, but because this is the fundamental sort of aspect of what NUMAP is and what you've been intuiting with the syntonic order of the cosmos.
Yeah, so we want to use NUMAP and apply it to really facilitate and empower this new emerging paradigm of co-creation. And co-creation, it involves this syntonic dimension. It involves this inner motivation. It involves this passion that we feel. So it's all about that. So we're going to be mapping and things like, actually, the actual set of frequencies, the set of holon types, if you like, are right now passion, vision, and it kind of begins with passion and vision, and then desire, intention, skill, resource, and then we have additional things like events. But the just mapping those first five frequencies of co-creation, vision, passion, desire, intention, skill, and then maybe resource is the sixth one, that will allow us to make visible the energy around us in a way that helps us co-create. So we're going to be able to see each other's passions. We're going to be able to see each other's visions. That a vision really is like a big desire, something that we really want, that is maybe like a dream. It's like, you know, free shelter throughout the planet for everyone, or clean oceans, or, you know, a vision is like a big desire, and a passion is something that brings us excitement and makes us feel alive. So we can make visible those energies around us. Imagine everyone mapping their visions and passions. So that's the first two frequencies. The next two, the desire and intention become relevant when we start to act on those passions and visions, and we start to create around those passions and visions. We start to follow our bliss, our passion, and create things. We start to look at our vision and think, how can I make that happen? How can I make that real and physical? So we have specific desires that spring up, and out of those desires spring specific intentions, and then actions follow. So there's this spectrum of co-creation or manifestation in terms of the frequencies, and we can actually map the energy around us on those specific frequencies. And then once we can see what people are passionate about, what visions are there, what is wanted and what is desired, and what people are intending and what they're doing, and maybe the skills and resources involved in those actions, then we can use that data to actually facilitate the process of creation or co-creation itself, to empower communities to self-organize and manifest their dreams. And I think that's how we're going to co-create the new earth. That's how we're going to co-create the new earth, by seeing what is around us and connecting spontaneously based on our inner motivation rather than some external thing or agenda or system that's being imposed on us, rather than acting out of survival and, you know, choosing from a predefined set of jobs that are really just there to kind of perpetuate our existence and to meet our basic needs. We're actually, we can somehow free ourselves of that by meeting our basic needs in ways that don't compromise our ability to pursue our passion and our visions. And then when enough people do that together, we'll see that it's not arbitrary. The visions and the passions we have are part of a larger plan. And when we act on our passions and visions and co-create, we become like a puzzle piece that fits together with everyone else becoming a puzzle piece. And the puzzle is Gaia, and the puzzle is Gaia's plan, because it's a planet. It's an extraterrestrial plan. so you see where it's going. And
it's beautiful. Chris, I don't want to interrupt you, but we have just 3 minutes, and I don't want to cut you off in 2 minutes or in 3 minutes. So we clearly need to do part two to really go and dive into kind of the application. And I love how you're mapping the frequencies of co-creation. And then what I want to make sure that we cover before we're done is a place to connect with you. And also, if you would want to name for people any needs of you and NewMap that we could just plant into the noosphere in this moment, because we can continue to plant that request out there. So let's just make sure people can find a way to connect with you. How would you like them to do that?
It's probably easiest to connect to me via my website right now. So I'm saying that because it might change. So I'll have a contact me page on my website. And then if you look on there, then I'll put on there the best way to contact me.
Perfect. So that's Larky, LARKY.org, right?
Yeah, and also ChrisLarkin.com as well. But yeah, either of those two.
Perfect. So for everybody, that's easy, Larky.org. And NewMap will be arriving. You'll be able to dance in that field soon. But through Chris, this is a great doorway. And 1 minute, Chris. Quickly, anything that's right at the top of your list that you'd like to name for a need, and then we'll just close in like 30 seconds.
I think the number one thing is we need enthusiastic, passionate people who resonate with us coming forwards and co-creating with us. And beyond that, we could do with more money, financial support, without strings attached that take us out of this new frequency and energy.
Beautiful. Well, let's hold both of those very strongly. And thank you again for being here, Chris. I just love, as you know, everything about all of this. And I'm right there with you as a co-creator. So thank you again for being here. And let's look at part two so we can keep diving into this.
Thank you, Sheree. Thank you.
Okay, and everybody, have a beautiful week. Have a beautiful week, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Obo Radio's The Heart of It All. To plunge deeper into ideas, inspiration, and activities for living as love in action, visit Obo's website at onebecomingone.org.